like, oh, everyone has a podcast. It's so old. No one's doing it. And now 2 years later, I'm like, ah, I wish I had started back then.
Yeah. That's what I'm noticing. Like you said, everyone has one. And it's like, well, yeah, why don't I?
Exactly.
Cool. So let's just start off. I want to hear about your story. Like, how did I find you? I think I just, oh, so actually, like, three people I've had on have talked about you and how you've helped them.
Amazing.
And I was like, shoot, okay, let me see who this is. And I was already following you. I was like, oh, okay, I know who this is. And I really liked a lot of your posts. Like, I love the quotes that you put out there. They're challenging and they're unique.
Cool.
So then I was doing some research on you and I was like, oh, wow. You know, like, you've been killing this stuff for a long time. So let's hear about it.
Cool. Yeah. So, I wasn't someone who had like a huge kind of like fitness transformation story or anything like that. For me, I've always been interested in fitness, always played sports. Growing up, I actually got my first job at the age of 15 at a gym so that I could get the free membership. So for me, it was always just kind of something that I wanted. I saw sports as being like, you know, my ability to compete there. And then I was like, I looked around, I was like, there's not a lot of women who are lifting weights. And I was like, to me, this could be a competitive edge. So it was like me and like all these like middle-aged men at this gym. And I just loved it. I just fell in love with weight training and how it could transform not only your body, but also transform your mindset and just make you feel a lot more competent and confident. And so after that, I went to college and I ended up getting my degree in exercise science. And there was, again, no question that that was going to be my major. So I was super lucky that when I graduated college, I was able to get a job working full time in fitness, which is kind of rare. Like, I wasn't a trainer. I was, but I was working. I had salary benefits. I was a fitness specialist running a corporate fitness center in Washington, D.C. And I love that. I got so many hours training on the floor all through college. I was a fitness instructor, group personal trainer. And then a couple years into that job, I ended up doing my first fitness competition. And so I got up on stage, did a series of figure competitions, fitness modeling competitions. I got into fitness modeling. And for me at that time, throughout my 20s, it was all about, can I land a magazine cover? Can I get sponsorship by different supplement companies? Can I work at the Arnold, at the Olympia, and the booth, and all that kind of stuff? And so a lot of it was ego pursuits, which at the time was fine. But I always loved that the way that you ate could change the shape of your body, and the way that you moved in the gym could change the shape of your body. And I felt a lot of freedom in that. And also, it felt like a control mechanism at times, right? If I can just eat a certain way, then I can look a certain way. And when I look a certain way, then I'll be accepted. I'll be loved. I'll be affirmed. I'll get the approval that I'm seeking. And so before I even knew it, I was really just totally attached to the kind of affirmation that I got when I was, quote, in shape. And so for me, it became a lot of like about ego and things like that. And it wasn't until I started my business at jillfit.com as a blog in 2009. That was kind of like back in the early stages of blogging, the golden ages of blogging. And started getting a huge reader all over the world. And for me, that was when, instead of it just being about me and am I in shape and am I going to win my competition, it became about other people. And so from then on, it was totally transformed just my, in terms of how I saw fitness and nutrition as a vehicle to help others. And I know it sounds so cliche, but anyone who has it, you have a podcast, if you have a blog, you have a social media following of some sort, even if it's just friends and family, you've probably had someone come up to you and say, you know, I really love what you posted the other day, or that tip that you gave me really helped me. And so for me, over the last 7 years in my business, it's been about that. And now mostly what I do is business coaching for fitness professionals. So I help them kind of do what I did, to kind of get out of the time for money grind at the gym. I call it the fitness hustle. We're working at like three or four different gyms, running all around town, trying to get different revenue sources from all different places. And so I'm helping them build their online businesses so that they can, quote, make money while they sleep, or create products and services that service people outside of their local area. So that's my biggest charge right now. And that's probably 2/3 of my business.
Yeah. And I noticed that you did achieve those aesthetic goals. You hit the magazine covers and all that. What was it that kind of transformed your outlook on it all? Like, how did you get away from that? Just grow up or what?
Yeah, I mean, kind of, right? Like, you do at some point, but you know, some people never grow out of that. I was lucky that in starting my own business, I had the experience of impacting other people. And I think I needed to have that, right? Like I had that as a personal trainer. I got into personal training because I love making impact my clients. But once you start blogging and you create a lot of content on the internet, and you know this, it's like all of a sudden you're on the hook. And it can't just be about you, right? It can't just be about you. It has to be like, oh, you know, crap, I have to keep showing up because people want this from me. And so I found a lot of freedom in making a transition and my purpose in life and my meaning and how I was deriving a sense of meaning and fulfillment from helping other people transform their bodies or getting up on stage even. And so that's how I mostly started, was actually coaching fitness competitors and seeing them lose like 30 pounds, 40 pounds, 50 pounds was incredible. It got to a point, well, I'm sure we'll talk about this, where the nutrition stuff started to become a little bit more neurotic for me. And I love the idea of learning biochemistry. I went back and got my master's in nutrition. So I was like steeped in biochemistry. And at that point, it just became information overload. So I know you said you talk about habits. I think one of the biggest kind of the opposing factors to becoming like habit-based is too much information, right? Like we go down the rabbit hole of biochemistry and all this kind of stuff. And it's interesting and it's fun, but we become paralyzed because it's too much stuff and we can't implement any of it, or we're scared to do anything because we think we're going to mess up every second. And so I went down that rabbit hole of information overload, and then I kind of came out on the other end just being like, you know what? I don't have to do 100 things. I just have to do like these 3 things consistently and I'll pretty much maintain and be good. And so that was kind of an evolution. And for me, it's been a lot of freedom and liberation in that.
That's so funny. Like that was exactly why I started this, because I would read and read and read and I was like, well, I want to do this, but this person said not to. And then I was like, you know what? I just got to pick one thing and I got to be consistent with it. And I just got to stop reading.
Yep. Totally.
And that was the easy wins thing. And I was like, oh, well, this worked. And it's kind of a habit now. I have room for something else. And it just built and built. So
totally.
That's a good, great segue by you into habits. So I'm big on morning routine because that was what kind of set me up to have like the capacity to live healthier. You know, it's like about setting up your day mm-hmm. in the beginning so that you're in that mindset to do good things the rest of the day too.
Yep.
So do you have like a specific go-to routine?
Yeah. So I'm like one of those entrepreneurs who like doesn't have a super specific morning routine. I have a day routine. As someone who works from home, I have to be super disciplined with my time. Otherwise, like literally it'll be like noon. I'll be like, what have I even done today? You know, for me, it's about when am I most creative? And then in that time, I'm going to be writing, emails to my list, doing social media posts, any sort of like content program creation I'll do. I'm most creative at night. I know it sounds like that's a little bit odd for most people. I'm actually most creative in like the 6 to 7 o'clock hour at night. And so what I do in the morning is busy work. So I wake up and I do like the things that I have to do every day, like my coaching or return emails and things like that. I do that first thing because if I don't do them, they weigh on me all day. So I'm like, oh crap, I know I have to get to those. So what I do is I get that stuff out of the way first and then I go to the gym. So for me, I work for like about a 2-hour time block and then I have some sort of like reset, like mental reset, emotional reset, physical reset. And then I come back to work again for a couple hours. So this is called time blocking. I don't know if you ever heard of this. It's super intuitive. I learned about it from Brendon Burchard. And it's basically like we have time blocks. So I usually do about 3 time blocks a day, 2 to 3 hours of work. And then in between, I'll either go to the gym, I'll go for a leisure walk, I'll take my dog out and play with her for a while, or I'll do something just kind of reset me emotionally, physically, and then I'll come back and I'll be way more focused. So I actually work less now than I ever have, but my work is so much more focused that I'm much more productive.
Yeah. So in those blocks, is it like everything is out of... they're like, you don't do anything else.
Yeah.
Right? You block
totally
everything
focused.
Out.
Yeah. So it's like internet's, if I have to write something, like internet is turned off, you know, social media is off, phone is away. Like it's very like regimented. So for me, it's 100% super highly focused time.
Yeah. No, that's huge. Did it take some time to be able to get there? Like,
yeah, for sure. You know, and I come from the old school way of like, if you're busy, you're important, you know, if you're like doing stuff all the time, you're important. Yeah. So to make the mindset shift over to like working less and taking more downtime in my day, like, honestly, I'll be honest, I'll like sit on my couch and read for like 2 hours at like noon. And that felt like, I was like, am I lazy? Like, I hated that feeling. And it was a huge mindset shift until I started doing it. And then I was like, whoa, instead of doing like 50% like productivity all day long, I'm at either 100% or 0%, and I don't need to work as long. So I read a book called The Power of Full Engagement by Tony Schwartz. And I read that in like 2008, totally changed my mindset around scheduling and productivity versus being busy. So now, like, my goal in life is to tell people when they're like, hey, how are you doing? Are you busy? I'm like, no, I'm not busy. Like, that's my goal in life, is just to tell people that I'm just not busy. Because for me, it's really about how much work am I getting done? How much focus time am I getting done? And how, you know, much can I leverage that time?
Yeah, it's like you're trying to make busy less cool now.
Yeah,
right?
I hope so. Yeah. I know. I'm like, busy is boring. Anytime you talk to someone, like, I'm so busy, I'm like, that's just boring. Like, you know, for me, I'm like, how can I be less busy but still be productive, right? Like, I still want to get stuff done and have big goals, but do it in a much more efficient way.
Exactly. And that brings me to also, like, you talk a lot about mindset. Like, that's one of your core things. Can you kind of go into a little more detail on what it is that you
Sure.
teach people as far as mindset goes?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Honestly, I kind of hate the word mindset because I feel like it's like thrown around so much lately. And also just like people don't really know what that means, right? So it's like, oh, mindset, I have to work my mindset. And our clients don't ever say that to us. They're not like, hey, Mitch, can you help me with my mindset? They'll say stuff like, oh, I fell off the wagon, or I just can't seem to stick to it. You know, so it's different for them. So that's what we need to like kind of translate. For me, mindset is one simple thing, and it's perspective. Mindset and perspective, in my way of seeing things, are totally interchangeable. So it's just how you see the world, how you see the way that you eat, how you perceive yourself, even how you perceive other people in your world. Do you see life as being out to get you, or do you see life as being a series of challenges that you have the opportunity to learn from? So if you've read, I'm sure you've read Mindset by Carol Dweck. She has a growth mindset.
I was gonna ask you that.
Fixed mindset. Yeah. And so a lot of it does come down to that. To me, it just means perception. It's literally like, is something happening to you or something happening for you? And then if you, like, for example, if you're stressed that you can't eat healthy or you can't stay on your eating routine, you have the choice in that moment to beat yourself up, to, you know, feel guilty, feel shame over that, say like, why can't I do this? I'm so bad at this. And that negative self-talk on top of already not doing the thing that you want to do just makes it even worse, right? It compounds the situation. However, we feel like guilt and shame and like self-disgust have utility. So we hang on to it. We're like, oh, but if I'm not guilty, then I'm definitely going to go way off the rails next time. But what they've actually shown in self-compassion research is that when you show yourself compassion, you're much more likely to be compliant because you don't have all that negative self-talk taking up all the space in your brain that would otherwise be available for you to do the things that you actually want to do. So for me, mindset is about self-compassion. It's about giving people the benefit of the doubt. It's about choosing to see things as growth enhancing versus like negative, and things like that. So mindset is really just about your perspective.
So was there some big transformation mindset wise for you? Is that why you're so passionate about it?
Yeah, you know, it was. It was actually in my relationship. So I had it around food too. I certainly had kind of the beat yourself up mentality when it came to not being able to diet for a show or not being able to kind of stay on my regimen. And I didn't realize that that was going on. But the reason why I felt so compelled to start reading a lot of books, so I've read like The Four Agreements, is a go-to book for me. Byron Katie's work was transformational for me. Even just like some of, what's his name? John C. Maxwell's book, like, you know, How Successful People Think, like some of that kind of stuff. For me, it was really because I was in a situation in a relationship that I didn't know how to make sense of. And I didn't want to feel like a victim. And that was hard because I didn't really know how to get out of that victim mentality of like, this happened to me, I'm hurt, this person hurt me, I don't know. Like, and I just felt like I had no tools. And so at that point, that was when I had found Byron Katie's work. I found Brené Brown's work. I started reading a lot of different kind of mindset-based books to give me solutions. And it was the first time that I really felt like I had a say in my life. And so to me, the ultimate in control is really like trusting yourself to be able to handle whatever life throws at you.
Yeah, that's huge. And like you said, like you change your mindset, that transfers in all aspects. You know, it's not like just, oh, now I go to the gym more. It's like you said, relationships too.
Sure.
Everything.
It's transformational for sure. And then so, you just approach life like you're just like, I'm fine. Like you don't really stress as much. You don't have as much anxiety about things and you realize you have a choice. Or like something is happening, but you can choose the way that you're going to perceive that, either growth enhancing or not.
Yep. That was one of the biggest things I learned from Gary Vee, or that I like from him, is he says like, you're in control. You're 100% in control. And so it's like, shoot, if something's happening that I don't like I can either dwell on it or just go make it happen, you know?
Yeah. It's a little bit tough love, but like at first it kind of feels cold. You know, but then like, once you get it, you're like, oh, I'm in charge. And that feels really liberating.
100%. So I want to get into the fitness side of things. I read something you said, you know, at one point you wanted to, get your work, you wanted to do workout videos and get it in front of everyone. Like why? So what is it that you really love about fitness and why did you want to do that?
Yeah, that's kind of a funny story. So the reason why I got, well, I told you I got my job at the gym. And so I started going to fitness classes. So I was actually working in the nursery. I was like the high school kid that was taking care of all the little kids in the nursery. That was my first job. And I started going to step aerobics classes. But even before that, I was into Jane Fonda and I'm dating myself here, but I was so super into aerobics. And then when I got to college, I joined the rowing team. So I was actually rowing crew. And then I was in the very first iteration of people who got to be taught to be fitness instructors. And I was a group fitness instructor all the time, but I loved aerobics, like doing literally exercise to the beat of the music. For me, I always loved dance and stuff like that. So I was a super aerobics nerd, like still am. Like I would still go to a step class or even teach one if I could. I remember I was out of college a couple of years and I met my ex-husband, now ex-husband, but Jade Tita, who is the owner of a company called Metabolic Effects. And he had just finished up medical school and we met up and we were talking about this and he said, well, what's the thing that if you could create anything in the world, what would it be? And I said, I want to have my own, at this time it was DVDs, home DVD workout so that people can do my workouts all over the world. And I love that. And I said, it was the first time I even said it out loud. And I was even just nervous saying it out loud. And he was like, you're going to do that. You're going to make that happen. We're going to make that happen. And that was the first time that I really felt possibility. Like, oh, I could do something else besides just this. And that was kind of a huge transformation for me. And I never really pursued it. Just felt too big. Didn't know logistically how to make it happen. But it was in 2000, I think, in 9, when I got a call. I was with a modeling agency at the time, and they called and they said, hey, we need you to do a demo video for someone for Comcast, and they want you to do aerobics workouts. And I was like, are you serious? I'm definitely going to get this job. If anyone's going to get this job, it's me. And so I did a little demo video, sent it in. I was like, I'm definitely going to get it. Anyway, I got it. They flew me up to Pittsburgh for the day. I filmed 14 workouts in one day. So I was teaching and doing all the workouts. It was the hardest day of my life. I got paid $6,000 for the full day. It was worth every penny. And the 14 workouts went out on Comcast and they were free on their exercise channel. And literally people were exercising to me and still are all over the country. And I get emails all the time from people who are like, I lost 30 pounds with your cardio kickboxing and I lost 20 pounds with your floor aerobics and stuff like that. So it's been really amazing that it didn't show up in the form of a DVD, but it showed up in a different way. And for me, it's kind of full circle. So I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So one thing, I mean, you've kind of talked about it, what you love about fitness and how it can transform your body. Why do you think some people don't enjoy it or just don't have that love? Say, it's not for me. It's not my thing.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest. Fitness doesn't feel great. Physically, it's kind of painful, especially if you're not in shape. And I think that's one thing that, as a trainer, sometimes we forget that for someone who has never exercised or even never been in sports, so I don't know if you've been in sports, but like growing up in sports, like you're used to getting to the point where like your legs are burning, like, and you're playing soccer and you're running even though you got to get the ball or your teammates or whatever. So you're kind of used to breaching that pain threshold. And so you're used to that like level of exertion. Some people just have never even experienced that. I remember I had a personal training client who's, you know, we're on the leg press machine and her legs started burning like they do when you're doing weight training. She thought she was injuring herself because she had never had that feeling before. And so I think the reason why people don't is either it's been too long, like we know, like inertia, right? It's like if you haven't exercised, it's even that much harder to get started. But also it doesn't like physically feel good for people until it does. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you're someone who you get to the point where you're like, okay, this is not easy, but I know that at the end of this, when it's over, I'm going to feel, it's going to be worth it. I know it's going to feel really good. So I think there's a threshold that we have to get people to at least start approaching when it comes to a pain level or a way to push themselves. And I think every person, a good coach, is going to find that place for each one of their clients and whatever that motivational tool is that they need to harness to help their client get there. Whether it's their purpose is they want to set an example for their kids, or they want to, they do want to get up on stage, or they want to run a half marathon, or whatever that like unique purpose is, it's our job as coaches to figure and tease that out with each one of our clients, and everyone's going to be so different. And so to me, coaching is not putting the workout together. Like that's easy. Like that's not what coaching is. Coaching is a skill. And so it's coaching your client to success is really what it takes. And it's such an individual approach. And I just feel really lucky that we get to do this.
Yeah. So how would you suggest people get started then? Would you say like you kind of have to find a coach, or what are you thinking?
I think a coach can be great, but I'm a huge fan of like just doing like the smallest thing first. And I know you are too. I think sometimes we make a mistake of thinking like people need to get under a heavy barbell. Like for me, obviously getting under a heavy barbell is great, but like that's like 20 steps down. That's 10 steps away from where we're at right now, which is the couch. And so for me, you know, people always laugh at like those couch to 5Ks and stuff like that. And to me, I'm like, if someone can just get walking, I know that sounds like it's not enough. You have these trainers who are like, well, I need to be weight training. I'm like, yeah, they do have to be weight training, but let's start with walking, or let's start with Zumba class. Honestly, to me, because if you start doing Zumba, then maybe you're going to become, you know, fall in love with that. And then you're going to go to like maybe a weight training aerobics class, even if it's like 2-pound dumbbells, at least you're doing something. And then you might occasionally eventually find your way up to the weight room and you start on some machine stuff. And then all of a sudden you're like, you know what, this is kind of cool. I wonder if I could do some dumbbell and free weight stuff. Right. And then you move up to 5 steps later, you're doing barbell training. And so for me, I think it's important to meet people where they are and also help them realize that every little bit does truly count. I think the mindset piece is probably the hardest thing to convince our clients that something isn't nothing. That's really hard because we think, oh, I need to go all out, or I need to kill myself, or I got to start and I got to do 6 days a week. And so getting your client to start with the small stuff is really a huge mindset shift for a lot of people. Most of us are all or nothing, and we know if it's all or nothing, it ends up being nothing. So finding a way to convince them that the small stuff really does add up.
That was the whole thing about easy wins, was like every time you do something, because like you said, it's always better than nothing. Yep. Remember that it's a win. And,
for sure.
And, you know, tell yourself I'm winning, and eventually you're going to be like, wow, I'm winning a lot. This feels good. Like, how could I win more?
For sure. So, I love it.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, how much time do you have?
Oh, I just messaged you. I just have 20 more minutes.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
20?
20, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Cool.
So, on to, I like to talk to people about like just their thoughts on diet and where they're at. So, what... Let's talk about your transformation with diet, because I know I read some things, you know, you said, maybe this doesn't even go into diet, but there was a post where you said you were at your leanest, but you felt the most insecure. Mm-hmm. Explain that. Was that, what's going on there?
Yeah, you're reading some old stuff, but I like it. for sure. It is, like I think we talked about before, I love the idea of being able to change your body based on what you put in your mouth. I think that felt like, to me, that was just such a like an amazing thing that I had never thought about before. I was always loved fitness, but I really didn't get into nutrition until I did my first competition. That was the first time I had ever dieted, and my body responded. So if you've ever done a diet, anyone's ever done a diet, like, you will see results. It always works the first time. And so for me, seeing that transformation and the kind of affirmation that I was getting, people at the gym were like, oh my God, you look amazing. What are you doing? When's your show? And it was a whole lot of like 6 months of like being just pumped up by people around me and feeling like really good. And it was the first time that I was starting to get attention from my body. And I was like, man, this is pretty addictive, but I didn't realize that in the moment, right? So getting up on stage for the first time, I ended up winning my competition, which is amazing, but I didn't think about like post-show approach. Like for me, I didn't really have, I was 24 years old, didn't really have the capacity. So I started stuffing my face. I gained 15 pounds in 2 weeks after my show. And I felt like a different person. And there weren't any more compliments. There weren't any more like, oh, you look great. Like all that stuff went away. And I remember feeling so ashamed. Like I was so weak and I just felt bloated. And I was wearing like men's large t-shirts, like out in public. And I didn't want to be seen in public because I didn't want people being like, well, what happened to her? And so I thought the only way that I can get back to the point where I'm getting all the compliments again is to do another show. And so I was like, I just need to get right back on a diet. And so I think maybe some of your listeners can understand that mentality of there's that embarrassment or that guilt or that shame when you're not in the shape that you know that you've been in before. You're like, oh, my potential is here and I'm here. If anyone's on Weight Watchers, right? The first time you do a diet, you're like, oh, it's, you know, and then you lose 30 pounds and then you slowly gain it back and then you gain another 15 and then you're like, I just need to do Weight Watchers again. And so that was it for me. And it became a cycle of dieting, and when I wasn't dieting, it was a free-for-all. And so you can understand how this kind of like what this kind of does to your mentality. For me, lean equaled good, and if I wasn't in quote show shape, then I wasn't worthy. And all this is happening without me really understanding any of the back end, right? Just kind of like, oh, if I'm not lean, I'm not good. And so it just bred insecurity. I was always looking for affirmation. I was always looking for approval. I was always looking for people to commend my hard work, to tell me that I was sacrificing. Like I lived for like the self-righteousness of like, I'm working the hardest. I have the most willpower. I'm so disciplined. And it just 100% bred insecurity. And it was all based on my physique. And it just really wasn't unhealthy. So I was at my leanest, but I was so insecure, not confident. I wasn't doing any of the things I'm doing now, like speaking engagements, videos. Like I wouldn't even post a photo online if I wasn't in show shape, 12% body fat. You know, so it's really, it is a huge just shift and a long story. And it took me about 5 or 6 years to kind of see what was going on and decide to make a shift. And then when I did make a shift, it took another like 3 to 4 years to really kind of undo a lot of the all or nothing mentality that I had going on.
So what was that shift?
So I have something called Moderation 365. It's my nutrition philosophy. And what happened was I had a series of shoots and shows, and it was my last, like, it was like 6 months long. I had been dieting for like 8 months. I had a whole bunch of events, and then I didn't have anything else in my calendar. And I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to put anything else in my calendar. And I remember the distinct moment where I was like, I'm not doing any more shoots. I'm not doing any more shows. So I have to figure out a way to do this forever. And I remember exactly where I was, and I remember I was walking, and I was like, I have to figure this out. And this is going to sound so silly because this is like just so stupid, but I was like, I'm going to allow myself to eat like half of a protein bar every day, right? Because when I was dieting, I couldn't have protein bars. I couldn't have like processed food. I couldn't have, you know, nuts or fruit even or dairy, like these weird like cheese and stuff. Now I'm like, that stuff's healthy. But looking back, I was like, okay, I'm going to allow myself to have a protein bar every day. And then I worked up to like a full protein bar. And then I worked up to like, you know, a couple little like pieces of cheese and like stuff like that. Things that were totally off limits that I would only eat if I was off season. But if I was on season, they were. So I was like, okay, how can I just like have bites of stuff? And so I use what I call preemptive cheats, which are foods that aren't typically like, they're not like donuts and cakes and stuff like that, but they're like bacon and avocado and, you know, cheese or a glass of wine, dark chocolate, stuff like that, that like I would consider to be normal foods now, but back then they weren't really in the like super clean list. And so I started just like strategically placing those in my day. and then the rest of the time eating, you know, really, really healthy. But then over time I was like, okay, I can have bites of stuff and I don't gain 50 pounds immediately. So having the evidence that I could have these foods and not gain a whole bunch of weight and also still like kind of be normal, gave me a lot of confidence that I didn't need to be perfect and that I could still fit into my clothes and all that kind of stuff. And it took, again, about 3 years to make that full shift into, you know, eating moderately. When I say moderate, I mean eating the same on Saturday that I do on Monday, basically. Not same foods, but same level of satisfaction, so that I don't have any ups and downs in my eating. I don't have like a Friday night binge. I don't have any of that stuff anymore. I eat fairly much the same every day. It took about 3 years to make that full shift.
Now that you know what you know, would you say there's a way to do that quicker than 3 years?
Honestly, like maybe, yes. I mean, there is. Because now I know the tools, right? Back then, I didn't know the tools. I'm like, let me try this. Let me try this. I know it sounds silly, but one of the tools is, for me, was not going grocery shopping. Because I had prepped my food on Sunday for like 6 years straight. And I was so disgusted with all my food at that point. I was just like, you know what? I'm doing it. I'm not doing it. So I threw my hands up. I did not prep my food. And I was like, oh my God, I'm just going to be at McDonald's every meal and stuff like that. I'm just ready. I don't even care if I gain 50 pounds. I'm so sick of this asparagus. And I didn't prep food. And I, you know, I ate like, okay. I had like protein bars, protein shakes, you know, takeout salads, stuff like that. And I survived. And so having the evidence that I could survive that without having to prep my food, honestly, I have not prepped food for like 6 years now. I just don't cook at all. But I needed to have that experience. So I don't know if it's for everybody. I think some people didn't have families and stuff like that. But that was something for me that was like a shift in, okay, I can still fit in my clothes without having to be so neurotic about all like having my food and having all that kind of stuff. So now I know all the tools. I actually have a course called the 4-Week Food Obsession Bootcamp where I literally teach every single tool that helped me. So it can happen faster because I was navigating it in real time and like teaching myself. I didn't read any books on it. No one was talking about this back then. And now I have all like the different frameworks and stuff. And so I teach those. So yes, it can happen faster, but still it's probably gonna take at least a year.
Yeah. And I think one of the big things that we talked about earlier was the information overload. And the way you figure it out is just by doing it, right? Like you can read all these things. Well, this is bad for you. I don't want to like gain all this weight. It was like, no, you just got to try it for yourself. And then when you prove it to yourself, you're like, oh, okay.
So true. So, well, think about that. Like, I mean, think about it. Most of us who have a food obsession, it's a control mechanism. So it's really hard to give up that control by trying something that we aren't sure what that's going to look like. But you're exactly right. You need to have a show of evidence that you survived and that you learned something from it to know moving forward. And so many of us are so scared to try anything. We'll actually keep doing something we know is not working just because it's familiar versus try something new because we're so scared to give up that level of control.
Seriously. And I find myself sometimes, I'm like, ooh, I shouldn't eat that. And I'm like, wait, why? Who cares? You know, like, how about I do it? And then I'm like, oh, actually, it doesn't really matter. Okay.
Yeah, cool. Or it does matter. And I feel like shit. So I'm just going to like not eat that again. But like, you have to see and try this stuff and use your body as an experiment. For me, the tool is mindfulness. Like that, the top dad, like top dog tool is mindfulness. And when you say that, people's eyes glaze over because they're like, it's like moderation, mindfulness, mindset, right? It's like these words that get tossed around, but really like mindfulness really is the tool. If you can master that, and there's a lot of different tools that I teach to my girls of how to actually do it. So it doesn't just feel like this big, like amorphous thing. You can actually do it and there are tools and ways to implement it. As soon as you can be mindful, you're not scared to try bites of different foods because you're like, I know I can stop myself because I don't need to eat the entire cake. I can have a tiny slice or a couple bites. And if it's great, then I might have a couple more bites. But if it's not top dog for me, like I'm just not going to indulge in it. So having that ability to be discerning is also a practice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like what you said, like, or you do feel like shit after you eat it and then you just don't do that again. Like you yeah. can always bounce back and having that confidence is huge.
Yeah.
So the next thing I want to talk about that it all wraps into is just overall happiness. I always ask people, what are some things that you do to make yourself happy?
Yeah, I mean, what are some things? So, I mean, for me, my business makes me happy only because it's a 100%, like I get to like wake up and create whatever I want, which is like, for me, if I'm not engaged, I'm not happy. I'll tell you a quick story. So a couple years ago, I have a business coaching program that's actually launching this week. And it's for a year long program, but it's 11 months. So I gave myself the month of December off. So we start in January, goes to the end of November, and then December we have off. And I wasn't gonna do any coaching during that time period. And 2 years ago, I didn't do any coaching. And honestly, I was like kind of depressed. It was the first time in my life that I had really felt a level of like depression because I wasn't engaged. And so for me, if I'm not like in the process of like, I don't have a course going on, or I'm not like helping someone, or there's not like an active kind of coaching relationship in my life, I don't feel that level of engagement and action taking. I mean, to me, that is misery. And I need to, so instead of being like, oh, I need to take a break, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, my break is doing something I love. So why aren't I engaging? And so for me, if I'm creating something, I'm always in flow. Like, I'm like, what's next? Yeah, it can get draining, but only if you're not loving what you're doing. If you're forcing yourself to do something because you feel like that's what you need to do or what you should do, and you're not doing it because of it, then you just need to trick yourself. So for me, I would say happiness comes down to two things, creating and engagement. And then the second thing is relationships. For me, having really fulfilling relationships with girlfriends, my family, even my ex-husband, like it's important for me to cultivate really close and deep relationships. I get a lot out of that, and to have meaningful conversations. Like, I love this conversation just even because it's meaningful. I feel like there's, and this is exactly how I talk to my friends too. And we have that exchange. So for me, I'm not really good at small talk, but I love having deep conversations about things that I feel like are important. So those two things I'd probably say are make me the most happy.
Yeah, no, that's great. And one thing I notice every time I ask this question is that when people have those answers, I'm like, you kind of had to work up to get to be self-aware enough to know, like, I'm creating, that's what makes me happy. How did you get to that point? Because self-awareness is huge.
I just noticed that I wake up and I'm pumped to do it. So for me, it was like, okay, like if I wake up and I'm like super excited to work on something, look, again, if you own your own business, like I only get paid if I work, right? So yeah, I have like things that work on the back end and stuff, but like if I want to continue to evolve my business and continue to be relevant, I have to create shit. And so for me, it really does come down to like, I have to be pumped with what I'm doing, otherwise it's not going to get done. And if it doesn't get done, I don't get paid. So you have to have a lot of discipline, but more importantly, you have to have a lot of passion. So for me, it's not time management, it's passion management in a way. Like if I'm not pumped about it, I'm just not going to do it. And so when people say like, oh, I don't have time to do that, or I haven't, it's like not really a time management problem, it's a passion problem. And so yes, you have to have a level of self-awareness. And for me, I just knew in the moments when I wasn't creating, I felt depressed. Like I felt disengaged. I felt stuck. I felt, you know, just negative energy and just not in flow. And so I came to know that based on just having the experience of it.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Okay. Two more questions. The first one is, where can people find you? Where can they find your stuff? What do you want them to cool. go contact you at?
Awesome. So I'm Jill Fit on social media. So if you guys, probably the best way, if you want to keep up with what's going on, relevant stuff, probably just Instagram at Jill Fit. That's where kind of like everything that's relevant. If you guys are watching stories, or you're doing posts, that's if you want to get involved with programs and freebies and stuff like that, Instagram, Jill Fit. Facebook, I'm Jill Fit, and that's just jillfit.com. And probably my best stuff goes out in my email. So if you guys are on jillfit.com, just add your email address anywhere. And I send out weekly broadcasts with all sorts of stuff around mindset, body, physique, and business as well.
Awesome. Awesome. So last question that I ask everyone, if you could wave a magic wand and change one thing for people in their lives to make them healthier, what would that be?
Hands down, it would be self-compassion. Like just knowing that they're like awesome, like right now, they don't need to change anything. I feel like when you come to a place of like acceptance, that's when you can actually start striving. I know it's kind of an odd place to be, but for me, self-compassion, hands down, when you show yourself kindness, it's like getting the foundation that you need in order to strive for the next level. So if you don't have a level of compassion, you're always going to be striving for a place of negativity or a place of like not good enough, a place of, questioning your self-worth. But if you can feel worthy right now, having never lost a pound or being exactly where you are and feeling worthy right now, that's the foundation that you need to build upon. So for me, that's definitely the number one thing.
That's awesome. I love that answer. Cool. Well, hey, I know you got to run soon. I really, truly appreciate you taking some time, you know, on your Thanksgiving vacation. Great convo.
Yeah, obviously. And, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. We got to stay in touch.
For too, sure.
For sure.
We will. Let me know keep when up with.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
Cool.
Thanks, Jill.
All right. Thank you. Bye.